All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a ride.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound. Very.
Expanding reality.
Welcoming back to the show, we have Ben Carroll, one of my favorite musicians, souls, people, humans, entities, any of it, running around this realm. Dude, you are just like this amazing dude that I see floating through life, and you're just doing incredible shit, and you're quiet about it, but you're just doing incredible shit. You're not making a bunch of videos boasting about yourself and talking about how full of shit the government is and shit. You are sitting there holding space for a collective that needs that more than ever. And it's a fascinating intuition you have about this place, and I love you dearly for all of it. So guys, all the ways to find him are going to be linked down in the show description. His soundheals.us, soundheals.us. I love that you did that, by the way. I see what you did. His YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, all the things, as well his first appearance with his partner Janine Burgess on the show. That's all going to be linked down below. I cannot say enough amazing things about this dude. He has been on the show and in our hearts and woven through the reality of us in this place for a while now, but we have not heard his story. We're going to talk about how silly it is, and I think it was Heath that was on the show and explaining to me what band you were in, what you did. We pulled up your music. Like, I was losing my shit over this, and I was like, how have I not known? I knew you for 2 years and didn't know any of this, and now we're all going to get to hear something that no one has heard before so publicly. And it's just the time, right? And this is what you and I have been talking about. 2025, man, we're going to get into it. But first of all, brother, it's so good to see you, man. How have you been?
Brendan, it's so good to be here, hanging out, talking with you. It's going to be an awesome conversation. And yeah, things are good. I think we met in like 2020 or 2021. And I was like, when you like came out, like, 2 years later, and like, I had no idea you were in Raw. I was like, holy crap. Like, I thought you knew that when we did the podcast first, but there we were, and you had no idea.
Because you're a Scorpio.
And because I actually tend to never talk about myself. Like, if you follow me on social media, if you're watching this, you've probably noticed that I just like post videos of me singing, but very rarely share about myself, because it's a little uncomfortable to do that. But that's what we're doing here today, opening up.
Sharing,
friendly space.
Yeah, it's a safe place to do so. I love it, man. I'm so excited about this, honestly, because yeah, Heath told me that. I pulled up. I was like, no way, and was just, and of course, songs went on playlist immediately. I'm just obsessed. I'm just like, Ben, I think I called you right away, actually. And it was just so funny to know you for that long and to be a musician, you know, touring musician, be a fan, honestly, and then to not know that. It's just, it's again, guys, if you know any Scorpios in your life, you know what this is like. They just don't offer shit if you don't ask, you know, and when you do ask, it's modest in a way that you just go, oh, maybe I should move on because they don't seem like they want to answer the question. So you do. And then it never comes back up again. And then 2 years later, you find out this dude was in Raw. Amazing.
Yeah. And a lot of people have no idea that I was in Raw, which is I actually think is really cool, because I had a lot of success with rock music, and then, well, we'll get into that story, but then completely walked away from that and built a fair amount of success doing something completely different where nobody even knows what I was doing before. So it's really been an interesting journey.
I have a dear buddy a while back, and we were talking about Red Dirt country music and stuff like that, just country music and stuff. And he goes, yes, I love all this, but I'm still a Garth Brooks fan. And I said, well, what about Chris Gaines? And he just got this super serious look on his face. And he goes, we don't talk about Chris Gaines. And this is the side project that Garth Brooks had, right? That the attempt he went at it, but he went at it through the,
oh, yeah,
right? Through the lens of using his stardom as Garth Brooks to launch that career, which is not going to work, right? Because then you're trying to get these other people to like music that they don't like in the first place, no matter who's playing it. And then they just sort of, again, don't talk about you. But you did it in an interesting way. You had your run, and we're going to talk about all this, but then you reinvented yourself from the ground up, having no, not building on that previous sort of fandom and stardom, if you will, which is, again, fascinating. You just threw it all and started over and are incredibly successful at anything you do. And it's just beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. And the whole sound healing thing was, from my conscious mind's perspective, a complete accident. Because not what I wanted to do, but from, you know, a soul level thing, it was what I was supposed to do.
So let's get into this, because this is a message that you actually got. And we are absolutely going to get into this, guys. I have a chronological order of sort of a timeline of what we're going to talk about here. But of course, I'm just excited to hear your story. I've been into your blog because you sent me a bunch of really cool stuff. And again, thank you, man. Your preparation for this conversation was incredible. So let's talk about where you want to begin, perhaps this altered state of consciousness brought about by sound.
Sure. So, yeah, sometime in probably the late 80s, mid 80s, I don't know how old I was. I had something happen that's an extremely, very much a core memory of myself. I was laying on a hammock in my yard. I grew up on a farm in Salisbury, Massachusetts. And, which is a beach town, right on the coast in Massachusetts. And planes used to fly over all the time, like dragging those banners. I don't even know if they do it anymore, where they're advertising stuff and they're going to the beach to do that. And they used to fly right over our house. And one day I was a kid laying in a hammock in the sun. It might've been, you know, like spring when you first start getting that warmth and it's just really comfortable to be in the sun. And I just started zoning out to the droning of a plane engine. And I went into a completely altered state of consciousness, something that was so, so comfortable, just like an expanded state of being where the sound was kind of lulling me into some kind of opening. And it was extremely powerful. As simple as that was, that's like one of the core memories of my whole childhood. And, that experience is actually what started me working towards playing with sound and playing with music. After that experience, I started sleeping with a fan on in my room to just kind of tune into a drone, and I would kind of hum along with it and literally like travel out into space and just, you know, travel through galaxies and energetic clouds. And, you know, it's just something I did when I was a kid. And a lot of us probably did. And because when we're a kid, I think our third eye is like wide open. But yeah, that was a powerful, powerful experience that ended up like shaping my life. And that's why I became a musician. That's why I became interested in music in general.
God. So what was the first instrument that's considered an instrument, I suppose, because anything's an instrument, right? That you gravitated towards?
Well, the first instrument that I started taking piano lessons when I was, I don't know, junior high or something like that. And played piano for a while, never got really good at it. And then I think it was the eighth grade, I got my first guitar. And, you know, begged my parents for that. And then that became something I put a lot of time and effort to. I used to practice hours and hours every day and ended up going to school for that. But a funny story is, before that, when I was younger, my mom came to one of my sound healing experiences once. And she said she it freaked her out because it sounded like all the noises I used to make when I was a kid.
What?
Yeah, which is interesting.
Well, and why would
I guess
freak
my first voice
out?
Was my first instrument was technically my voice. Well, I just right. don't have a lot of recollection of it. But, you know, that over just growing up in this world, that ended up getting turned off at some point. Just like closing down, going into public school and being an empath in that scenario, like you just kind of cocoon a bit just to feel safe.
To survive. Yeah. To get it through it, dude. You're being punched on a bunch of sides. You're like, fine, I'll fit this shape for now. And I'm out of it and I'm back. It's wild to me, man. So, because you were not the lead singer in Raw, Serge was, but you, so it's fascinating that you started with vocals. Again, your mom thing, we're going to come back to, man. And then it went into your musical career, your public music career, which we're going to talk about, lead guitar, not vocals, but you did backup, right? Harmony?
Yeah, I sang backup.
Okay, that's what I thought. And so within that framework, though, not the spotlight vocally, and then out of all of it, put the guitar down, grab some sticks, not for drums, for bowls, and then let the voice fly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a long journey, decades long journey.
Let's come back to the to a little bit earlier in your story, and we're gonna come back to that part of it, because I still think it's fascinating that so it scared your mom a little bit. So she hasn't been back. What do you think the resistance is? Is that, did it scare her when you were a kid? Did something happen?
I don't know. She didn't say. I don't know that it scared her. She just said it freaked her out. I guess you take that as being scared.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I don't know. We didn't zoom in on it. I was just like, well, that's interesting, and we never zoomed in on it.
I've heard these stories of people who say that their parents won't talk a particular day or a subject or something like this, and always change the subject. And finally, sometimes they'll get, in some cases, they'll get their parents to admit that they had a freak out experience with the child when the kid was young, that the parent just sort of repressed and won't talk about in the supernatural sense. Like, they walked in and all the chairs were stacked upside down in the middle of the table, like poltergeist shit. They're like, yeah. What is going on? And like, so things like that, but they knew the child was responsible for it, kind of a thing. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't know if there was some powerful sound stuff that occurred that she'd blocked out and was like, oh my God, this reminds me too much of your power and I can't.
Yeah, if that did happen, then I don't know anything about it yet.
Okay, fair enough. Well, maybe you can look forward to that, you know? I don't know. Maybe we can all look forward to that.
As a kid, I had a lot of experiences. I remember really, really young having visitations of lights in such a positive way. Just it felt really comfortable. I remember that very well in my bunk bed as a kid, just experiencing lights coming down and feeling a really positive energy. I don't remember any specific like interaction other than just the feeling. Yeah. And just a lot of interesting thing happens. One of the things, so when I was a kid, I found, since we're talking about me as a kid, I found this TV show one day called Other World. Do you remember that from the 80s by chance?
Maybe.
So it blew my, like as a kid, as a little kid, it activated something in me. And it was like, oh my God, like it had that expansive feeling. So what happens in the show is this family travels to Egypt on vacation. They get a private tour of the Great Pyramid at the time when planets align, and they're in there at the time when the planets align, and they actually get transported into an alternate dimension.
Awesome.
And to me as a kid, that was like it from having all the experiences I've had in my life now, it was like activating a memory, even though it didn't trigger anything specific. It was like, I know there's something there.
That is wild. I've never heard of this. Very interesting. We're going to talk a little bit more about this because now I'm fascinated about it. But I mean, how cool is that too? That this another pop culture thing, right? We talk a lot about these pop culture things that ignite things in us deep, you know, that you sort of carry with you. And because they're pop culture and they hit you on this nostalgic level, it's something you really remember and resonate, right? How interesting though, man. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your walk-in experience in 94. What happened with that?
So on August 20th, 1994, I remember the date, I had an experience where I left my body and I traveled through some dense energy and like felt a lot of fear and like something was trying to get at me. Something was trying to do some bad things, and it felt very violating. But I got through that and I made it into a space where I was in a crystalline pyramid, and this was 1994. I was 17 years old. I was in a crystalline pyramid and I met with, from my perspective now, knowing it was a collective of higher dimensional beings, And being in that crystalline pyramid, which is how I saw it in my mind anyways, was a way of entraining my vibration up to a point where we could actually connect, and in some kind of exchange can take place. And it was like a collective of beings that were kind of wispy energy. But there's a really famous picture that I've seen many times over the past decade of like these energy beings where they're kind of made of light, but they have a human form. I've used that picture because it reminds me of that and other experiences I've had with interdimensional beings. And so I was with these beings and we were having an exchange. I wouldn't call it a conversation because it wasn't words, but it was information. And so I'm trying to figure out the best way to dive in. So we talked. So at that time, I was still completely obsessed with music. And we were talking about sound and vibration and things in a way that I didn't understand when I was 17. But that was a place in time where I was, I integrated with a higher version of myself, which is this is really hard to talk about. Not that it's like difficult and challenging. It's just like, it's so hard to put it into words.
Yeah. It's like a psychedelic experience. About it.
And what I literally did with the blog post is I did the speak to text and then just edited the punctuation and I left it at that. It's like, that's the best I got. But, I had to agree for that joining because even though it was a higher version of myself, the consciousness that I was in this incarnation had to agree to it because of the laws of the universe. So I did agree to it. And one of the things that was agreed upon was, you know, starting to work with sound and energy. And I didn't understand what that meant, but first being a popular musician, being a rock star. And that was one of the things that was talked about that I was going to do. And I was like, well, the only thing I ever wanted to do in this world is play music. So that's a hell yeah. Cause you know, at that point in my life, that was the only way that I understood that you could actually play music and, right, and play music for a living and not have to do some soul crushing job. And so there was a joining that took place, and that's the walk-in experience. It wasn't like an exchange of consciousness, like you hear about some walk-in experiences being. This was like a joining of consciousness. And, you know, that was a massive point in my life that changed everything. And I would, after that point, I started getting kind of multidimensional coaching, for lack of a better way to put it. Some of the topics were about the pliability of reality in the way that you can actually create reality. But a really big thing that kept coming up repeatedly for years was about karma, and not karma as in, you know, not the slap in the wrist karma where you do something wrong and you get in trouble and you're punished, but it was about energetic balance. It was about keeping things from getting tangled so that I didn't become trapped here. And ways of transmuting energy quickly and effectively, and also just being having integrity and not being a douchebag. And all of that was stuff that was going on for years, just different conversations isn't the best word, but it's the word we got, getting different information. And because of that, I started trying to find corroboration, you know, all the stuff that was being downloaded, which at that point in 1994, 95, 96, 97, it was really freaking weird. These days, everybody's doing it. And that's something I want to talk about after, but we live in a different energetic reality now, but in 1994, it was really weird. And I was also because not like they told me what to do, but it was also kind of impressed upon me that it wasn't a great idea to talk about these things that I was learning because it can create it could create that kind of energetic tangling that that I was being warned against. So yeah, I started going to bookstores and going to the metaphysical section and like just reading whatever I could, because I didn't have any money, couldn't afford to buy books. So just reading, trying to find corroboration about all the stuff. And to be honest, I never really found a lot of corroboration. And you know, it's really weird that I like didn't bump into any channeled material at all. Cause I used to go to the metaphysical section of like every bookstore like regularly and just kind of park myself there and read things. Like I feel like in my version of reality, like channeling didn't even populate into my version of reality until 2012.
Damn, there's tons of Edgar Cayce books and Seth Speaks and shit all over the place when you go down there now. So like you said, maybe it was just this timeline thing.
Yeah, I have no idea how I wouldn't have bumped into them. That's my logical mind's only explanation.
That's wild. But do you find this that you'll like get involved in something or see something in reality or start to feel a certain way and then either everyone's doing it or it's just the way and it's new? Mary and I have noticed this in our lives too. Yeah, you'll like change your mind about something and then all of a sudden a bunch of people do in a wider scope of like globally, right? Just because you changed your mind about something.
Yeah, that's literally jumping a timeline.
We're going to get deeper into timelines. I want to continue on your story. I've got timelines here that you and I are going to remark upon. Let's get back to your story because I'm just going to start railing off on this. But I do want to ask you a side note to what you talked about getting tangled in karma and about getting trapped here. Is that the sense of the... let me ask you it this way. Is there a soul trap in your mind because of that answer? And if so, is simply the way to avoid it being balanced in your karma so that you don't get tangled and trapped here?
So soul trap, not so much like an intentional soul trap from my perspective, but there is, so talking about coming in as a starseed, or whatever word you choose to call it, there's a chance that you can get kind of tangled and not remember who you are and then get pulled into a karmic cycle so that you have to burn off that karma. Again, it's not punishment, but you get trapped here for a period of time. And that's what I was being warned against. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, like if you're coming in to play basketball in the NBA, but really you go join a motorcycle gang for a little while. You know, it's probably...
Yeah. And, you know, nobody's perfect. It's not an uncomplicated system. I think there's a lot of layers going on in this reality energetically. But yeah, it's just all about not allowing yourself to get into a place where you forget completely and get sucked into the world so completely that you lose that part of yourself that is open up to expansion, which is how you connect that thread back down and maintain a bit of higher dimensional awareness when in this body. I guess that's the best way I can put it. So keeping that level of activation, you don't need it 100% of the time, but enough like when you're on the highway, you know, you're not always driving perfectly straight as an arrow. You're kind of course correcting as you go. And you're never driving like straight down the middle, but you have enough in there to keep you on track, keeping yourself energetically open enough so that you have that thread of higher dimensional access open is important for all people that are here on in this kind of way.
First of all, brilliant analogy. I like the sort of gutters on either side of a bowling alley analogy of like, look, you're just going to stay between them. You're going to just keep going. But not a straight line. I like that because that's brilliant. But also it gave us, and I don't know about you guys out there, but I sort of got this little, that does feel better. Thinking that you don't have to be so specific and perfect about it, right? You just follow your heart kind of thing. You know, it's in all the movies, right? Just follow your heart, everything you need's within you already. But I like the way you put it. It's simply being open to expansion. It's literally just being open to your reality being expanded. And that is you're in path with the divine because it will do that in front of you. And then you'll follow it again.
Yep, exactly. Expanding reality.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you. That's awesome, man. Thank you. You did it twice now. You've done it twice on the show.
Thank you. Well, that time was intentional.
Call back. All right. it's a beautiful sentiment though, man, because it gives us a lot of variance in play, but also it's a guideline, right? You know?
Yeah.
I think it's nice. It's comforting.
Yeah. And, you know, I really do believe we have a lot of, we have a lot of guidance, a lot of safety here. Not that we can't get entangled, but we have a lot of guidance and we're really in a place where we're super, super held and guided through this existence. But we just most of the time aren't aware of it when we're in this 3D reality.
But is that part of it? Being unaware of it?
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of the journey. I mean, when you zoom out completely, the whole reason why we come here is because it's really exciting to completely forget who you are and slowly remember. It's like, holy shit. Like, and we've all had those experiences where you're like, something clicks and you're like, oh my God, my mind was just blown. And then your reality expands. Like, and that's the upcycling of the evolution of our soul, those expansive moments. So basically the whole purpose that we're here is expanding reality.
Come on, come on. Beautiful. I love it. Dropping it. So but why does it feel so simple when you say it and comforting and easy and fine and achievable and doable and look forward to a bowl, all those things. But up until this point, I mean, you know, and like anything, you can, your mind will let you have whatever you want with it. Right. And so I think, you know, at a certain point, the expanding reality leads you to so many perspectives that it gets confusing and it gets convoluted and you start considering so many factors. But really, at the end of the day, what you just said makes the most sense, man. And really, yeah. It's all part of it.
Yeah. And it's just allowing yourself not to get entrained into the vibration of fear, which is a big part of how we're manipulated into states of fear to hold our vibration down. You know, us as a collective, we've been manipulated and we're continuing to be manipulated, but it's not working because a lot of people are waking up. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of things coming to the surface, but that's been the play that's been going on for thousands of years, that of on the one hand, controllers trying to control us basically because we're powerful creators and we create reality.
Politicians are all dickheads.
True. We're very powerful creator beings and we're being manipulated to create a reality that we don't want when we allow ourselves to get pulled into those spaces of fear, you know, basically, and we're going off track, but it's a beautiful off track. Basically things are set up in a way that hijacks our creative powers through our consciousness, through our awareness, and through our attention, because a consciousness, awareness, and attention is our attention, is our intention, which is the energy of creation. And when we're, perfect example, with all the douchebaggery that's going on right now, I don't like any side, so politicians are all whatever.
Politicians are all dickheads.
But I don't think any side has our best interest in at heart. It's all about entraining us into a state of fear so that they can use our loosh to create the reality they want, use our creative powers against us. And that's something that's been going on for many, many years, but I don't believe it's working anymore, which is why it's become so obvious. It's just like, it's the time when it's like, The fourth quarter, I don't even know. I don't watch sports, so apart, they're going for a field goal at baseball, and someone gets a. but it's I think it's played out, and we're in a place. We're in a place where we had especially coming up to 2012, we had a convergence of multiple timelines where all these possible timelines came together. And even though there's still an infinite gradient, it was really two main parts, the pathway of destruction and the pathway of ascension, which is the final turning point in 3D reality here where we are now, still running the hero's journey. But the timelines all smashed together, it was really easy to switch back and forth. And I do believe, at least in my version of reality and your version of reality, because we're here together, that we did align with the pathway of ascension. And where we are right now is a very powerful place. And it's also a very tumultuous place because everything's coming to the surface. Our energies are shifting and people that aren't ready for that are feeling like tension and things shaking up and jumping down like five rabbit holes instead of staying on track.
Dude, I love it. No. On track is exactly where we are. This isn't a straight linear path. This is more like, do you remember the X-Men, like the X-Men comics, and they had Iceman? Do you remember this?
Remember Iceman?
Okay. Do you remember he could shoot ice in front of him and surf any way he wanted, right? If he wanted to do a loop-de-loop, he could. If he wanted to go around that building that way, he did. This is how we're doing this, brother. But it's like a rainbow music bridge of awesome. And we create it and it goes anywhere we want. I do. We are going to come back to your story, though, because that's what we promised here. And I've noted, though, to bring that back up in the afterthought, because I still have more things to ask you about this, about the evils serving a higher purpose. But let's talk about it in a minute. But let's get to your period of darkness, man.
Well, it was a pretty big expansive period before the period of darkness, because it was an exciting time. So, I had that walk-in experience, and then I went to music school several months after that. I started the Berklee College of Music and, studied music. And it was also a very lonely period of my time when I was scouring metaphysical bookstores and all of that. And I was playing a lot of music, practicing guitar, like heavily, like 8-10 hours a day. And I got to the point at Berklee where I felt like anything I was learning, I would only ever use if I taught at Berklee. So I kind of felt like I was like at a dead end. I was doing things that weren't resonating anymore and kind of making progress toward things that I didn't need. And at the same time, I had always been doing a lot of searching and seeking, and I had discovered a book called Many Lives, Many Masters. And that was like one of the first books that really corroborated, just because that was the first time I ever read anything about any kind of interdimensional beings. So they're talking about the seven masters in that book and the life reviews and what that, but it was fascinating. And and I also magically found the book, Carl Jung's autobiography at the same time, in the same place. I like these two books that kind of changed my life. So I was reading a lot and exploring a lot and going to school and playing a lot of music, but I got to the point where I didn't know if music what I was supposed to be doing anymore. So I thought about dropping out of Berklee and going to school for psychology, psychiatry. Kind of playing back and forth with, do I take the scholarly route, or do I go for a worldly existence to be in the world and of it? And I decided that, music was always my number one calling. So I decided to take some time and really pursue music, try and actually make a living with music, which at that period in time, the only way that I was told that I could be a musician and make a living was to get a record deal with songs on the radio and that whole shebang. And I formed a band, and the first band I was ever in, I was in for about a year, and we got some decent stuff going on, but it ended up just kind of, fracturing and falling apart. But I had made some great connections. So then I found Sahaj, the singer from Ra, and Ra was already kicking, but they were just like a local Jersey band. And at that point in time, it was like just him. I joined Ra, and long story short is through the connections I had in the band previous that I had made connections at a radio station in Boston called WAAF. And when we gave them our demo, one of the DJs there, she started playing it and the phones lit up. And people were requesting it, and then it got added into regular rotation, and really exciting. When you're like at that point in time, I was this was like the spring and summer of 2002. I was 25 years old, a really young and naive 25 years old, and getting songs on the radio and people wanting my attention and actually listening when I talk. And then we released an EP that sold like 10,000 copies in like a short amount of time. I want to say a week, but maybe it was a month. I don't remember. And Universal Records instantly picked us up. Never heard the band. Signed us to a $1 million record deal. They don't give you $1 million, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Got signed to a $1 million record deal. And the myth is that Ra literally signed the last $1 million record deal. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's the myth.
Who says that and who started that? Or why do they say that?
I don't even remember. I think I heard that. I heard someone say that. And I don't remember who said it. It was, years ago, not till 2002, but probably later in the 2000s, because at that, 2002 was right in the peak of Napster years or starting towards it. By the time 2004, 2005 came around, by the time our second record came out, record sales had tanked. But for that minute, everything was amazing. We signed to Universal Records. Before we even signed to Universal Records, that song, a song called Do You Call My Name, took off and got airplay across the country. So we already had a charting song before we were on Universal Records. Signed to Universal Records. Our first album came out in October. I don't remember the exact date right now. October of 2002. And amazing things. I actually literally got to see myself on MTV, like my video. Well, MTV2, because by 2002, MTV did not play any videos.
They were doing the Real World Road Rules thing,
just,
right?
Just a really exciting period of time. Moved on to a tour bus in the early fall and lived on a tour bus for a solid year, just touring nonstop. At first it was great, and I don't want to knock it because it was an amazing experience. I got to play with everybody, everybody, Alice in Chains and Audioslave and like every band that was touring at that time. Disturbed, I got to hang out with all those guys. Stone Sour, we toured with for a while. So yeah, it was really exciting as a 25-year-old kid. That's like, it's like Disneyland. But it started to, there were periods of time where I would like remember, like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing, even though it was what I was supposed to be doing at that time. But I'd have that opening up of longing, like, there's something else I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this isn't it. And I remember like breaking down and crying in the parking lot of a stadium I was playing because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to. And it was an exciting and powerful and also tinged with a bit of darkness period of time. And as time went on, I went from being an extreme introvert, not that I was like painfully introverted, but I preferred my own company, to being alone 99% of the time, to living on a tour bus and not being alone 99% of the time. And, it was freaking intense.
Your space just completely invaded. I mean,
yep. Thousands of people want your attention every night.
3 feet away from anyone all the time.
people up your fucking ass.
Mm-hmm. Like,
when people think you're famous, it's crazy. You having experiences like going to Walmart to buy toilet paper and people freaking out and running up to the car to get CDs and Damn. Being in a gas station and having some kid like break down and cry because I was there. It was like, it was intense. I believe that energy is really unhealthy for us as human beings. It's that focal point, that pedestal we put people on. It's like a crack energy, for lack of a better way of putting it. That is why you see so many of these stars, especially younger ones, that just crack, because it's an intense energy that is a lot like a drug. It's addictive. And it opens up pathways in yourself that are a little bit dark. It doesn't have to, but I mean, I I suppose, you know, some people can navigate it perfectly, but I believe I was supposed to have the experience of going into the darkness and kind of experiencing that whole crazy side of life. And, you know, being in the introvert and having so much attention, I started to self-medicate with alcohol because it made it so, because alcohol for me and probably for a lot of people takes that empathic ability and that openness and that connection that you get when you interface with someone and like shuts it down. And I needed that because I could barely take eating lunch in the high school cafeteria, being left alone with all that energy bouncing around, never mind like having tons of people like at me. So yeah, I self-medicated with alcohol, and I used to actually joke that I only drank when I worked. Cause I, you know, if I wasn't playing a show, like if I had a day off, I wouldn't drink. And you know, when I was home, I didn't drink a lot, but on the road, like that was unhealthy, but that was how I'm maintained that kind of closed off space. So yeah, so I was closed off a lot of time, and it was a period of darkness. And, you know, luckily I never got into drugs, but they were always around, and I dabbled occasionally, but it was never like something that called to me. But just that whole lifestyle. I was literally in a room with P. Diddy once.
Damn, are you okay?
it was backstage at Giant Stadium. I didn't even ever have a conversation with the guy, but yeah, he did have weird energy. Side note. He definitely had some weird energy. Yeah, it was an intense place to be as a kid that was sheltered, grew up on a farm, was an introvert, a spiritual seeker. To get thrown into that situation was like being thrown butt naked into a tornado with lots of like jagged things flying around.
Yeah, that's terrifying, dude. Ugh. How would you handle that? Would you flail about or just tuck and cover your junk?
You gotta tuck your junk.
I think so. Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it was also exciting. And I got to play with all the bands I grew up listening to as a kid, or a lot of them, all that were touring at that time. But it never really, like, it never felt right. And then 2008 hit. And that was a bit of a financial collapse, if you remember. In that year, we did a lot of touring and we actually lost money. So we kind of limped out of 2008 and did some shows in 2009 and, you know, still lost money. The tour bus that we had was getting like 4.5 miles a gallon. And at that time, gas prices had skyrocketed, and yeah, it just wasn't sustainable anymore. So, we ended up going into hiatus. You know, that's after releasing several albums. We released several albums on Universal, and we released, a few more after that as well. But yeah, the band went to hiatus. So I went from living this kind of high profile lifestyle, and that was my source of income, and I was not saving. I was just enjoying, which, you know, I don't regret it now at this point in time, but in 2010 I did.
Like, so, God damn it, kid.
Yeah. So at that period of time, you know, the band stopped touring, the relationship I was in blew up. It like imploded. And I ended up crash landing in Maine in 2010. Going from living on a tour bus and having a fairly high profile lifestyle and freaking chaotic lifestyle to landing in Maine, kind of stopping drinking completely. So no, barely ever any more alcohol, and started actually singing a lot. A good friend of mine is a guy named Jamie Vendera, who is an amazing vocal coach. He's literally like the singer from Dream Theater's vocal coach and like everybody's vocal coach. But I've known him for many years. He was always a fan of Ra, and him and I just clicked. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. So I was like, I want to start another band because I have no fucking idea what else to do with my life. And I called him up because, you know, we're friends. And I was like, do you have any like amazing students that, that I could like steal to start a new band? And he's like, you don't need a singer. I'm going to teach you how to sing. So I was like, sure, dude. but you know,
I asked, but thanks.
But I started working with him, and you know, started really focusing on my voice with the same kind of dedication and focus that I was focusing on guitar with when I was a teenager, and in my early 20s, pre-Ra. And started getting more comfortable with voice. But what happened is as I started using my voice, things started changing. Like it was almost like it was also coupled with the time where I stopped drinking. So things were already opening up. But I feel like starting to use my voice in that way where you're creating sustained vibration in your body started to create subtle shifts in my consciousness. I started like having those reawakenings towards the things that I had been exploring in my teens, in early 20s. And yeah. And then by 2012, everything changed.
Dude, just what a story. I mean, again, and just some interesting turns that you had made along the way. I do want to come back to that. You were 25 when you signed, and it was October when things just really boomed for you guys that
year. October, our album,
the album dropped.
Yeah. Right.
Well, when I was 25 in October is when I did the biggest thing in my music career so far, which was to go to China and tour there for a month. And so we, at the same time as young men at 25, got this massive opportunity to do these crazy musical things. And you know, we kept our wits about this. I think we got to enjoy the experience. It was fucking crazy. Mine was nothing like yours or as sustained as yours. I hopped in and got a very interesting awakening from the universe to kind of come take care of a family member. And so I put music down for a long time to do that. And I'm just recently being called back to it, like hard, actually very hard. And that's maybe something you and I are going to talk about in the afterthought.
Yeah, definitely. So,
what from there? Because I mean, what a tremendous story. And I mean, actually I've got before from there, who was your favorite person to jam with that you liked before you were in Raw? Like somebody famous or whatever that you'd already heard their music that you loved. Who was your favorite, do you think?
Who was Tool was my favorite at that period of time.
Badass.
Tool, like the first time I heard Anima and I was late to the game, I was pissed. I was like, that's what I was hearing in my head.
Oh. See, that would be interesting if you in a universe, you're probably the guitar player for Tool instead.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Jones is a pretty important component. But yeah, that whole drone sound and this, you know, Tool has something magical. They're in a league of their own. You know, I honestly don't listen to a lot of rock music anymore, but they capture a specific kind of energy that is very activating. They do magical things with rock music that not a lot of people can pull off.
Yeah, I consider them Pink Floyd of our time.
Yeah, Pink Floyd, another one of my favorite bands. My favorite guitar player is David Gilmour.
Oh, fuck. Yes, dude. My favorite solo of all time, The Wall Part 2. Mm. All the bends. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, he's extremely tasteful. Yeah. What was I going to say? Nothing.
Okay. So Tool would have been the one that you got to jam with that you thought was the
We never got to play with Tool.
Oh, okay. Who out of the people you got to play with? Audioslave, Chris Cornell, right?
Alice in Chains.
Okay. So this is when Layne Staley was still alive, right?
No.
When did he move on?
It was when they were very first starting with William Duvall or whatever the new singer's name is. Mm-hmm. We played with him more than once. But I remember specifically, like being able to. Ra opened for the Deftones and Alice in Chains, and first of all, the Deftones I had somewhat enjoyed, and I was like, I don't know if they're gonna be able to pull that off live because his voice is really weird. Fucking amazing live band! Like I was blown away.
See, and I saw him, and the mix was horrible. I saw him with Poison the Well and Denali a long time ago in Houston, and they did something with his vocals. The effects were just so off and so overpowering that it was just unbearing. Man, I hated it. And that's what I've heard though is that Deftones are either The best band you've ever seen live or the worst? There's
the only time I ever saw them. And I was literally watching from the stage. So I was really super spoiled. Like I watched Deftones from the stage, first time I ever saw them. And then I watched Alice in Chains from the stage. I think we had played with them before that. But, you know, I was at that, you know, I don't even know if I caught the set before that because I was very self-involved in like doing whatever I was doing up to no good.
You're getting ready for the show. Yeah.
Well, by then I was off the stage because Alice in Chains never opened for us.
Fair enough. But I picture you and Jerry Cantrell hitting it off, like you guys being good buddies and stuff.
I never got to talk to Jerry Cantrell.
I'm holding out hope because I still see that. I mean, he's still alive. Hmm. So,
but yeah, that was like
in a past tense thing. I
literally cried during that show because like I was like watching Alice in Chains from the stage, and it was like I listened to a lot of Alice in Chains as a kid, especially Dirt.
And
Facelift, but especially Dirt. And you know, it was just like hitting something, like the way a sound activates memory. It was just like such a great feeling, and also a little bit depressed because that was the energy of where I was at, like amazing things happening and also in darkness. And you know, it was a bit of an emotional mess, but I was usually held together. But yeah, it was a really, really potent moment. I remember it very, very well.
Do you remember where it was?
Yep. At a baseball stadium in Scottsdale, Arizona, right outside of Phoenix.
Very cool. One of my favorite shows I ever played was in Scottsdale, Arizona. I had a radio interview there when I was on tour in the U.S. How weird that, again, not a stadium, but we have some interesting markers along our path here.
Was it KUPD?
It was Kevin Gassman. And then actually Grace McCormick, she's actually been on the show in another capacity. We just sort of kept in touch throughout the years, you know? And it is just really, really cool. Yeah, I was on an interview there on my U.S. tour after the China one, the year after the China one. Well, the year after my grandmother passed, actually, after I took care of her. Okay, so let's get back to a little bit of your story here, because we're going to get into our afterthought here for a little bit. But let's talk about 2020, the buffer's coming down, things changing completely, man.
Well, there's an important component in 2012 that, like,
I skipped ahead, my bad, 2012, yeah. Yes.
So 2012, you know, I started working with my voice, started singing a lot and feeling an opening. And as 2012, you know, that's 2010 to 2012. And as 2012 went on, things started shifting. I started doing a lot more exploration. You know, I discovered things like spirit science and a lot of other stuff. Definitely a massive reawakening was occurring. And on, trying to remember.
That's okay. It's a lie, man. This is a wild story, dude. Are you going to do a book about this, like an autobiography eventually?
I have no idea.
Okay.
So two things happened. So I started something called Inner Self-Sustained, which is what I used to call my, it wasn't even a business. It was just a Facebook page and a website to start. It's where I host my blog, innerselfsustained.com. And I started that unbeknownst at the time, on the same exact date when Rod's first album came out, exactly 10 years later.
What?
And I think it was October 22nd, but I can't be 100% completely sure. So October 22nd, 2012, I started Inner Self Sustained, when I was starting to like first share some of these things. Like, remember how I said, I felt like I wasn't supposed to talk about that stuff. That's when I first started like sharing some things, very small to start. And I did it through Inner Self Sustained. And I launched that on the same exact day that From One, Ra's first album, came out on Universal Records, exactly 10 years to the day. And then if it was the 22nd, it was just 6 days later, October 10th, 2012, I received a message to loud and clear to stop with songs and just be music. And that I needed to be with the people that set my heart on fire. And, you know, I often got downloads, but this was like loud and clear. I like heard it in my head, like stop with songs and just be music. And you need to be with the people that set your heart on fire. So that was like early in the morning, And when I got up and had my first cup of, I think I was still drinking coffee at that point, first cup of coffee in the morning, I got invited to go see a native elder speak the very next day. And I knew it was connected. Like the room got all bright. I don't know if you've had that experience where the light just like intensifies and it's like your spirit guide's going, you better freaking realize this. We're going to like blow your mind open so that you'll actually pay attention. And it, like, I knew that I was supposed to go to that. And it was the very next day. So October 29th, I went to see a man named David Lone Bear Sanipas speak at the Maine College of Art in the auditorium. And it was like he was talking to me. Like a lot of the things that he was talking about had been with like corroboration of things that I had been being taught as a teenager, and things that I had been reawakened to and focusing on in 2012. And it was just like, it was just extremely powerful and opening. And then on the way out, everybody filed by him and like shook his hand. And he stops me and he's like, why are you so bright? And it was like one of those moments, like it was kind of weird, but it was like kind of flattering. And it was after having that deep connection with what he was talking about, it was interesting. So I started getting more involved with him, and then started working with him one-on-one just a handful of months later, working on a lot of different stuff. And this will turn into a 6-hour podcast if we go into everything. But the very first thing that he had me start working on was working with tuning forks as a third eye activation to begin with, and just working with tuning forks, tuning into the sound, and basically opening up my state of consciousness. And a lot of things happened from that practice. And there was a group of us working with him around this time through the end of 2012, and then for years later, and working with bringing large groups of people together, you know, auditoriums full of people and sometimes smaller groups, to what we were literally doing was generating energy to create an arc of energy, creating an arc to push us towards the timeline when we were on the pathway to ascension. That's what I gleaned in the years of working with him. I acquired a great understanding of that. But at the time, you know, we were just coming together and it felt amazing. This great energy, people coming together, flowing together. And that's when I was, he taught me a type of toning called bee's breath, which I use a lot, and I use it at all my in-person events. And that's, I was working with that with groups of people, you know, in, I think by 2013, 2014, and holding space for people, myself with others. It wasn't just me, but things started to drastically change. And doing it with groups of people, there was like a core group that we were all building this energy together. And David was kind of at the front of it, because he was teaching us how to do this. And I was working with him also one-on-one, learning sound healing was like 10% of it at most, but there was a lot of stuff there. But yeah, all working towards creating an arc of energy to jump us to the timeline of ascension, like we were talking about in the first part of this podcast. And just worked on a lot of things with him. In the way that David works, it's kind of like if you've ever been and seen someone painting like on a YouTube video or something, and they're like flinging paint. It's like, and there's paint splattering, and you're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, that makes no sense. And then, you know, flinging their arms around, and then they flip the painting over and you see it and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's Abe Lincoln.
Wearing sunglasses. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Those things are crazy.
That's to me, how David teaches and works. It's not really like, it's not about, here's a batch of information, you memorize it. It's like, what sticks to you? Like, he throws stuff out there. And for me, it was a lot of sound stuff when we were working on together. And just kind of opening pathways and holding space for the awakening to take place within myself. And it was a really, really powerful period of time. Amazing, amazing experiences. 2014, I got my first set of singing bowls and started that whole process, really going deep with sound, deep with groups of people, building energy, starting to remember pieces of past lives, and like so many mind-blowing things. We took too long to get here because we could talk about it for an hour. So everything changed in 2012. Got my singing bowls in 2014. I never, ever, ever planned on working with the bowls with people. It just wasn't on my radar of my conscious mind. I was like, it was a hard no. I was working with the bowls every day, traveling on the sound, creating massive shifts in consciousness, aligning myself in ways to create expansion and opening. It was amazing things were happening. And I also had another amazing experience in 2014, which I suppose is really important to talk about. July of 2014, I have what I've started calling a micro ascension experience. How I don't want to make this podcast run too long.
Dude, run it as long as you want. We're in no hurry at all. Like, you just take your time. Let's tell your story.
All right, because I feel like we've been talking a long time.
We have been talking the most amazing amount of time, and I can't wait for more. Like, there's still more of the story to be told. Let's do it for sure. I want to hear about this micro ascension experience.
So for years, I had been called to Asheville, North Carolina. It kept coming up repeatedly in a number of different ways. I even had a dream about it. And I had never been to Asheville. I didn't know anything about it. And one time, Rod did a 2-week string of dates, I think in 2013 or something like that. And I was waiting at the airport to fly to Portland, Maine. And I had like a 2-hour layover. And at some point, it actually changed to Asheville, North Carolina. And that was just one of many, many things that happened. So I finally made it there in June 1st of 2014. And the very first night I was there, I had an extremely powerful energetic experience. I was blasted awake and I shot across the universe, like streams of light flying by, dead silent, except for a series of ascending tones, which I don't remember the exact tones, but it was like, and I was flying across the universe and it was freaking horrifying. Like I got scared and I popped back into my body, but I felt like I missed something. I was like, no, I want to remember. There were beings there, which happens sometimes, and kind of got a download of that I needed to be there at that time, because they showed me two pieces of paper with holes in it and sliding the pages around until it matched, the holes matched up to get an energetic transmission that I needed at that time. So that happened the very first night I was in Asheville. And nothing else crazy happened while I was there. And that was June 1st. So I got home after that and things slowly cycled up. My energy slowly cycled up. And by July 9th, I was living on a different plane of existence. It's the most amazing things that have ever happened to me. It's some of the things that are just like, honestly, like unbelievable. I started calling it a micro ascension experience because I feel like it was an experience given to me where I was blasted into holding a higher state of resonance that was able to shift me into whatever words you choose to call it, 5D, new earth frequencies, whatever you want to call it. But I was still living the same life, still living in the same place, but I was experiencing it completely differently. The way that the energy interfaced with my body was so much more clean and aligned. And I had like extreme psychic connection. I could see energetic connections really, really clearly. I could see how all my life all our lives are synchronicity, like the whole way we're like guided by synchronicity through our whole lives. We just don't normally see it from the perspective that we're at. And I felt so safe and so held, and I had crazy experiences of, there was one night I was that whole 9 days, I barely slept. Like I just felt bliss. Like I was activated and awake and felt pure bliss. There was one night I got up and it was just, you know, the middle of the night, the wee hours in the morning, whatever. I just wasn't sleeping, but it just felt great. And I got up and I walked over to the mirror and like just got close. And I literally walked into the mirror, and light was like creating shapes and forms. And it was, I've never done DMT, but maybe it was like a DMT experience. Yeah. And it was, I literally walked into a mirror.
Are you sure you got back out?
Maybe. I mean, maybe there is no back out. There
that's
was
what never I'm saying
to begin with.
God, so another, that's another what it time was. It was making your body resonant to where it could fit through the thing, like Neo in the Matrix, right? When he touches the mirror and it just, yeah. So, and then I you mean, came into that mirror world. Dude, that'd be crazy if that's what this is. We just get vibrationally enough to where we just step in through a mirror and go, oh, thank God I'm out of that shithole. You know?
I mean, yeah. That's I think you can. But so another thing that happened, one more, there's a whole bunch of things that happened, but another like crazy thing was I would go outside in the rain, and there was a couple times where I literally like called torrential downpours. And it wasn't like I was like, I want it to rain now. It was like I knew it was going to just like downpour, and just kind of welcomed it. And it rained so hard that the water literally got up to my ankles. Like the kind of rain, it's not like just a random rainstorm. And I could just feel the connection from the sky to the precipitation and just feel the downpour. It was amazing. I stopped doing that because lightning started striking my backyard more than once. And the last time it happened, or one of the times it happened, my mom was actually on her way in the back door and she almost got struck. Her hair was literally standing up. So I was like, maybe I shouldn't be playing around with that.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah. And just like mind-boggling experiences in meeting with extra dimensional beings and receiving information, and just 9 days of complete amazing bliss. And that was 2014, July 9th through 18th. And, you know, after the 18th, the energy I was holding started to wind down. And during that period of time, the person I was with actually broke up with me because she said it didn't even feel like me. And like that was probably one of the things. And that relationship then limped on for another handful of months. But that was like one of the things that started cycling my energy down. And then, you know, as summer turned into fall and the energies were really coming low, I got to a super low point where I was worried about finances and just really, really dark. And what I know happened now was I was not able to hold that vibration because I had, because of all the limiting beliefs that I was holding, all the programs that I was running didn't allow it to stay there. So, after that, I just started cycling down and went way down below where I started, got to a super low point. And then over time, because I want to live my life there, I haven't figured out how to get back there yet. So at first, that was like a complete shifting point. I was already like on the path, but I went from too far into the dark with Ra, and then I ended up going too far into the light. Like I wouldn't swear. I did everything I could to possibly, did not drink alcohol, did not drink coffee, did everything I could to try and like build my vibration up, and went too far into the light. So swung too far back that way. And, you know, and then I've realized that since 2020, you know, I've shifted into a bit more balance, because balance is extremely important. But yeah, that was a really, really powerful experience. And, you know, it kind of shattered who I was. That was like an intense awakening. I was already on the awakening path at that point, but I had to lose everything that I thought I was, which happened after that, to get to a place where I could shed those things. It, you know, it's not like I'm perfect. I'm still working on it. But, you know, my version of reality at that point was completely shattered. I was never like a believer in the mainstream of what I told was being going on, but I didn't realize that everything was a lie until I could really feel the version of reality and see how, you know, it was siphoning off my energy functioning from that reality.
Which makes you perfect in my mind, by the way. I know these people, everyone who says I'm not perfect, by the way, that you are. That's what it means. It means that you're changing, you're evolving, you're growing. That is perfection. There's no such final state. I mean, if there is, you'd turn to stone and then eventually that would chip away, right? That's when you stop changing. I mean, it's if you're changing, you're growing, you're learning, that's perfection to me. I mean, especially in this place, that's all we can ask for, right?
The beauty of the journey.
Man, that's what it is. That's what it's all about.
Forgetting and remembering it.
Dude... It's so interesting. I've got so much to talk to you about in the afterthought about this, because we're going to go deep, guys. We're going to go into the philosophical on this. I'm going to definitely I got to know more about these extra dimensional beings, how the conversations take place, what's notable about it. I've just got so many questions, Ben. So you and I are about to have an amazing afterthought. I just want to make sure that we cover all of your timeline, as well as absolutely talk about your signature singing bowls through the Ohm store, which is amazing, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to add to the timeline of where we are now? Because I know 2025 is, we've got some more to say about the tower moment and your change and your coming out now. But to that point, was there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, yeah, I mean, so quickly, by 2017, I started doing sound healing for a living, because literally what I was doing before magically dried up like in a period of 2 weeks. It was basically the universe like twisting my arm and like pushing me through the door. My income completely dried up for about 6 months. And then I decided to book some events. And I've talked about this a lot, so we don't have to go super deep. I might've talked about it on podcasts with you. Income dried up and decided to try what I was doing at home, which was singing with the bowls in front of an audience with people, not an audience, but as energy work. And it went really, really well and very, very quickly became what I did for a living. And as soon as I raised my prices, all my events started selling out and I was doing really well, traveling all over, doing like 10, 12, sometimes 16 events per month, a lot of events all over New England and down the East Coast. And then 2020 hit. And I was getting burned out. So I was like open to it. And I shifted to online. I brought what I was doing in person online and was able to add things that I'd been wanting to add and play around with for a while, but couldn't do in person, adding things like binaural beats and synth pads. And that actually blew up, and then my social media blew up and it was going really, really well. But 2020 was, I had been talking for years about the changes that are going on in the world and like how everything was going to come to the surface and all this stuff. And I, you know, sometimes I got to the point where I was like, am I just like talking? Am I just full of shit? Like all these things that I was taught as a teenager and then were still downloading, it was starting to feel like bullshit. But then 2020 hit and literally there were buffers in place and they were taken down and we were given here on Earth, we're given the full force of the energy that had been coming in that's shifting the vibration of our whole solar system. Long story there. And I'm sure you know some stuff about that. But so the world went crazy. A lot of people went crazy because this higher vibration was coming in and they couldn't take it. It was literally like creating the higher frequency and the lower frequency were like creating dissonance in their body and people were losing their minds. And we all saw that happening or even experienced it on some levels too, because none of us were immune either. So the buffers came down and everything started coming to the surface. And we've been in that state for the past, you know, until now, till 2025. And again, if now that we're in 2025, it feels like we're at a place where something has ended but something that, but the new thing has yet to start. And I don't know exactly what that is, but it feels like an in-between space, like in a lot has been coming up and a lot has been, it's been different this year.
Nailed it with this. They call these liminal spaces, the transitory, right? Like an airport is a liminal space. It's neither here nor there. It's a place, but you're going there to go somewhere else, right? And it feels like even at a macro level, if we zoom out far enough, probably that this entire damn thing is a liminal space, right? Life itself, because we're transitioning from whatever we were before this to whatever we'll be after this. And this is just sort of an airport in between with tons of liminal spaces in between all that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The extreme slowdown of our vibration to like experience these different realities where we forget who we are.
You know what it makes me think of is a family on a road trip and they just decide to pull off the road to go into a safari park for a little while, like those drive-through safaris where you can feed ostriches out of your car, you know what I mean? And then a giraffe will put its head in your sunroof. That's what this place is. And you're just like, what the fuck? And some people have great times and some people, the ostrich gets in the car and they're freaked out. And some, you know, giraffes take their cell phones or something, probably. I don't know, but you get the metaphor. But it is kind of like this interesting, again, kind of liminal space. We're just traveling through this place. But it's fascinating the options of experience that we have here. And man, your ride so far has been incredible. And it seems to have just set you up for this phenomenal next half of your life, which you still have plenty of. So we still have a lot of wonderful things to enjoy from you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, life is good. Everything has changed since I started doing sound healing. Up to, you know, like you briefly mentioned, this past fall, launching my own signature line of singing bowls, which is so cool.
There's congratulations.
Such an upgrade from the bowls I was using. My old bowls are behind me. The new ones are over there for those that are watching the video. But yeah, an amazing opportunity working with the Om Store to like literally not just like slap my name on some bowls, but I got to design the set. We went back and forth for 9 months, dialing it in and just making super high quality bowls. And yeah, that's just like the pinnacle of the sound healing journey so far.
It's amazing. Did you have your own signature gear in RAW, like a guitar and all that?
I didn't have a signature guitar. No, I got lots and lots of guitars from ESP, right, but I didn't have like a Ben Carroll guitar. So this is my first Ben Carroll instrument.
How cool is that? That, you know, you got, because that's the thing, right? Like Joe Satriani has his own signature guitar and all that. Steve Ray Vaughan, all that stuff. But, you know, it's interesting that you now have your signature bowl series when the younger you was like, oh man, a signature guitar would be kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
I just think it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty mind blowing. It's such an honor. You know, life is good. It's an interesting journey when you allow it to be.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'll agree with that, man. It's a weird one, too, to allow it to be. That's a journey in a liminal space in itself, right?
Mm.
And do you still teach guitar for the guitarists out there who maybe want to sit down with you for a few chops?
I do still teach guitar, just a couple slots a week, because I mostly teach intuitive sound healing, which is what I do. But I have a couple slots of guitar. Yeah, I mean, I haven't had an open slot in guitar for years, but you can try.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if you guys want to reach out, all the stuff again,
get on the wait list.
All the ways to find him, link down below. Because there may be, you know, just some guitar player out there going, God, I'd love to just sit down with you for a lesson, you know, and just take one and hang out with you and learn, you know, learn the solo to Sky with you, you know, and I'll play the harmony part and you play the lead, right? You know, very cool, man. Well, I think we made it through, didn't we? I mean, 2025 is something that you and I are going to take into the afterthought because this falls into a lot of the philosophy I want to go deep with you on. But what a fascinating ride up to this point. What do you have going on right now immediately that you want to tell us about that you're excited about?
I guess right now, the singing bowls are really exciting, but it just feels like something new's coming. Like it feels like, and I don't know if it's going to be changing what I do. I suspect not, but it feels like it's going to be a new way of interfacing with the reality that we're in somehow, some way. Like it's literally like that liminal space where I'm in the liminal space inside the liminal yes. space.
Turtles. I don't know exactly what's coming yet.
And I've been exploring tarot for the first time and I did like a past, present, future poll the other day. And for my present, I pulled the Tower card and I have a history with the Tower card. And last time I pulled it, my life was literally falling apart And I was like, oh, it's like soul crushing. This time I pulled it and I was like, it actually felt really good to pull it. Cause I feel like, you know, you and I have talked about this, how I kind of pulled away over the past year. I like kind of stepped down. I feel like I've been like slowly exiting the tower for the past year, bringing stuff with me that I need. And for the past couple months, I've been standing outside the tower with a stick going like poking it. Like, are you going to fall yet? So when I pulled the card, I was like, I was actually happy about it. And that, you know, says a lot about the good place I'm at in life right now, too, I suppose.
So cool. You know, Mary and I do a card pull from Janine's deck every day. And I've gotten the Birth of a Goddess like 7 times now. And then Sovereignty keeps popping out. It jumps out of the deck sometimes, like 3 times in a row. It's been insane, like the consistency we get with that thing. Do you guys do card pulls with her deck?
Yes. Yeah.
How cool. Do you have a consistent card that you get? Or one that you get more often?
I mean, I've pulled I call it my card, I've pulled my own painting. She painted
your birthday
for my birthday in like 2017 or 18. I remember pulling that quite a bit. That's memorable because it's literally my painting.
That's perfect. What's the do you remember the word for that one?
No, I don't remember the word on the card.
It's okay.
The name of the painting is Eye of the Seer.
Oh.
Because it's all about shamanic journeying, but the card isn't named Eye of the Seer. I just know the name of the painting. I don't recall what the card is actually called.
Gotcha. Okay. And just for the audio only audience there, Janine has been on the show. Ben and Janine have been on the show. Janine has she's an incredible artist. And we're actually going to set up, email me down below if you guys would like to do a class with her. It's $25 per person. We're all going to hop online. Everybody get your acrylics and things like that. And we're going to sit down and do a class. So email me expandingrealitypodcast.com if you'd like to sit down and do that. That would be a blast. I would just, Ben may be there, you know?
Yeah, her work is just phenomenal. She's such a great artist.
Well, it's so cool, both of you, because you're both creatives, man, like through and through. Some people dabble in some hobbies and shit. You are both full blood creatives. What is that dynamic like in the home, living with somebody else who's also an artist?
I guess it's good. You know, she explores, I think she explores vibrational patterning through light, which is paint in her case. And I explore vibrational patterning through sound, like a repatterning, like an energetic exploration. So yeah, it's kind of like a perfect match. And literally, you know, exploring the tarot, I did a past, present, future pull with Janine as well, and literally pulled soulmate cards for present and future.
Oh, that's perfect. I can see that. You kids are so cute. I love you as a couple. I just think you're both just wonderful. Okay. One more thing I wanted to say, how much importance do you put on names? Cause you didn't choose your name. Is that a pseudonym or, is that your real name? Ben Carroll.
That's my real name.
No. What are your thoughts on names and the importance of them? Do you think that there's anything to your name?
I mean, on one level, I'm sure there probably is, because everything has some type of significance, but I don't believe that it's I don't think it's a capital letter importance. I believe, you know, that the higher version of myself is not named Ben, and I have a strong connection with that. And I've had memories of other lifetimes where I was not Ben, and sometimes not even male. So yeah, I mean, I do think there's some kind of importance, because there's a vibration behind it. The same is the vibration of your birthday. And, you know, I'm just riffing on this because I think your birthday is fairly important, because the alignment of the stars, what's the alignment of the numerological element of your name, or, yeah, I don't know, but I don't know what it is, but I think there's something of an importance there.
So cool. When I was in China, there was, you know, guys, and their name would obviously, they would have a Mandarin, a name that you would pronounce in Mandarin, but they would also have an English version of that name. Sometimes it was Jason or something like that. But other times it was like Tiger Chong or Double Happiness. And I really loved Double Happiness because that was his name. It was the character for happiness twice. And I was just like, oh my God. And he was like the jolliest dude you've ever met ever, right? And one thing I was thinking about when I see your name, this is sort of, okay, so I had Howdy Mikowski on, okay, but the way that he spells his name is Howdie instead of a Y, and so it's literally, he's talking about how to avoid the soul trap, and his name is How Die, right? So How to Die,
okay, is the way that it's spelled. And he's talking about how to die and survive the soul trap. But your name, Ben Carroll, in my mind, already the name, last name, Carroll, because you're a caroler, and Ben, because you've been doing it your entire life. So you've been caroling your entire life. This is how I see shit. It's really interesting. So yes, to me, it does carry an energetic vibration. I've also met people with a name like, I don't know how to say it, but like, stay away. Like, it will give me the impression of that their name literally is like, you don't want anything to do with me in a good way. Like, my soul said, call this person this so I will know not to interact with them. And then things will just go smooth because I'll just avoid it, right? Or move on. But it's interesting because you seem to have, you know, like old people had the word Taylor in their last name. It's because they were tailors, right? Mm-hmm. But you're a caroler because you've been caroling with your beautiful voice your entire life.
Just hanging out, you know, I've been caroling. I didn't know it was a verb. Now I know it's a verb.
Well, you've been badass here today, dude. And I'm ready to get to this afterthought because we got some deep shit to go into. Not that this whole thing hasn't been absolutely incredible and deep. Let's go to another level. Let's hit another frequency here.
Yeah. I mean, that hour like flew by. We like skimmed the surface. We were just a rock hopping on a pond.
You blew through it, and it's been like an hour and a half, and you blew through it. I mean, but that's the thing, is that there's so much to cover here that you, and honestly, you did the quick version, which I don't mind. Like, I like the depth stuff, so I'm actually going to come back and ask you about a few things back here in the afterthought that I'd like a little bit more depth added to, if you don't mind, sir. So, great way to support your favorite show, guys. Check the link down in the show description, as well as all the other ways to find Ben, his previous episodes on the show, as well as soundheals.us, soundheals.us. Ben, we love the shit out of you, dude. Before we let you run to the afterthought here, why do you get out of bed every morning, man? What keeps you moving forward?
The hope that we can make the shift. You know, that's why I do what I do. It's not like if we don't do it, I feel bad. It's like I've experienced a version of it anyways, what I associate it with. And I feel like if we can get our shit together, we can have such a beautiful experience here, exactly where we are. You know, we just have to work through this turbulence. And I do believe with all of my heart that it is going to happen, whether it takes 5 years or 500 years. I have no idea, but I know my truth is that we are on the pathway of ascension. We have cleared the dark shit, or are clearing it, but you know, we've gotten out of the grips of it, and we're on a very powerful, ultimately positive path. And it's an exciting time to be alive. How can you not be excited to get out of bed?
Homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.